Vorpal Network is the bomb, the cutting edge of geekdom. Comics, advice, D&D, movies, video games, RPGs. Finding it's easy, just stay calm. VorpalNetwork.com.
This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by Noble Knight Games, where Out of Print is available again.
And listeners like you, thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store.
Hey, it's Eric Mona from Paizo Publishing, and you're in tune to The Tome.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 162. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner.
And I'm Tracy Hurley, and in this episode, we're going to break things down to four simple colors and sketch out a talk about the D&D comic.
And with us in this episode is Chris Hurd from the fantabulous Icosahedrophilia podcast / blog. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you for pronouncing the name of my blog correctly.
I can pronounce the name of your site. I cannot, however, spell it.
Got it.
So that's the compromise I'm willing to reach with you. And I understand that your site, I know it's not time to pimp what you're doing, but I understand that your site is moving locations.
Actually, I'm just changing the URL. The new URL is drchris.me/d20.
All right. And we also have with us Jeremiah McCoy from the Basics of the Game, which I understand you're going to try to make a comeback with.
Yeah, that's the plan. I'm currently in the process of organizing some reviews that I'm putting some notes on. I'm going to record some things, put them in the can before I start actually putting it on the feed so that I have some buffer room.
Very good, very good. I look forward to the return of the Basics of the Game. It is a show that I listened to until about the time I moved here to North Carolina and met you in person, and then all of a sudden the podcast stopped. I have to assume it has something to do with me.
It is your fault.
Okay, I can take that. And we've got some D&D news to discuss today as well. And I'm going to let Tracy start us off with some news.
The one big thing that's been talked about a lot recently are the fortune cards. Wizards announced that they're going to be selling packs of cards that players can buy and use during their game to get some boosts during play. Very similar to the Twitter buffs for the D&D encounters, if you've seen them.
Good. And there's,
so,
been,
yeah.
There's been some controversy surrounding the fortune cards and the way it's going to interact with organized play. Because I don't know, I sort of feel like fortune cards in and of themselves are fine. You take them, you leave them, whatever. But they have mentioned that in some of the organized play things that Wizards does, they're going to be required.
One of the problems with them is that they're inherently, because they're, you know, given in different rare, common, and uncommon, and you're given a certain amount of power differentiation on them, is that they're not evenly spaced as far as balance goes. You know, one card is, in fact, more powerful than another card. Beyond that, the fact that they're going to require them for what they call the events for experienced players kind of smacks a couple of people wrong, definitely.
Yeah, the unbalancing, whatever, I don't mind that too much. In fact, I have a similar mechanic using the fate cards, which I think, Chris, you reviewed from RPG Now as well. I don't mind using that kind of a mechanic if the story makes sense using that sort of a card sort of mechanic. I think I would do the fortune cards a little bit differently than suggested, but still, I could get use out of it. My issue is that to make it required for certain types of organized play creates a collectible card format to a game that does not typically require a collectible card format.
Well, and one wonders whether or not that's, you know, it's sort of a almost a along the lines of an entry fee, and in most cases I wouldn't object, you know, to a $4 entry fee, to, knowing especially that I'm actually buying it from the local guy. I usually try to spend at least that much every time I walk into the shop anyway, just to reward the local game store for being there. But the thing that I am most concerned about on these fortune cards is the sort of poaching of one character on another class. So as I look at the different cards that have been revealed, and there have been about 7 cards revealed online at this point, that's almost 10% of the whole set. I look at those and I say, wait a minute, my wizard shouldn't be able to do that. That's an Avenger thing. My Avenger shouldn't be able to do that. That's a rogue thing. So you start to really break down the class differentiation, and suddenly what makes my character cool no longer is quite so cool, because the character across the table can do that just by playing a card. And playing a, can do that potentially several times more than I can during the fight, because my power is an encounter power, and her power is coming from playing this card every round. So if they were just buffs, you know, that would be different. But they're a little bit more than that. They're more like kind of shoehorning certain powers and class features in on a play a card and get this benefit kind of basis, mm-hmm. which has sort of moved me from cautious optimism to it's moved me from take it to leave it is really what it's done.
Right, and I'm sort of in the same category. It took me from, I might pick up a few of these to include my game, to a point where I don't feel like I particularly need them, and I don't usually do a lot of the organized play stuff, so if I pick up any of the fortune cards, it'll be to round out an order, you know, just to, so I can check them out in order to talk more intelligently about it here on the show, but I don't plan on picking them up for my own use at this point, unless, you know, they come out and I pick up one pack to review, and it turns out to be good. And changes my mind, but I don't see it happening yet. Any other thoughts on fortune cards?
I actually like the fact that you could break down some of the class stuff with them. I kind of sometimes don't like classes. I like to be able to have maybe one or two times where I can do something that's a little bit outside that seems awesome because it's not something I normally do. But I think a DM could... The whole problem is that you build your own deck. So depending on what the rules are with building your deck... I think that could determine how a lot of this goes.
Yeah.
But it really makes a difference because, I mean, imagine that I'm playing an Avenger and part of my shtick is I can give my allies a reroll. I mean, that's part of what my cool thing is. And that's built into the class. It's not a choice I can make. I can't retrain out of it. But now everybody around the table can make their own rerolls by playing this fortune card. And all of a sudden I have an encounter power that is essentially obsolete at this point, and it's one that I can't train out of because it's a class feature. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not as worried about that either, just because that's one card, and it's one card out of a bunch of randomized cards. It's not like that means everybody can suddenly do your cool thing all the time. You know, if people get to do my cool thing...
Well, we don't know that yet, right? Because we don't know the deck building rules yet.
Yeah, I suppose.
Right,
if I can make a stack of 10 rerolls.
On the other hand, I mean, deck building rules are going to come down the same way any of this other stuff comes down, isn't it? It's going to be the DM telling you how they want you to build the deck.
I seem to remember there being a note on one of the organized play portions where they were saying how in organized play you would show up and have one card for an organized play session. So it's not supposed to be like you have this deck of cards like magic that you keep playing out.
Right.
Maybe I misunderstood that, though.
And I remember from...
what they said earlier, that's not the way that the product release has read, the printed information has read in the last few mentions of it.
Right. And I suppose, you know, in organized play, that's a big deal. For home use, you know, each table can figure out how they want to use it, if they want to use it at all. All right, so let's move on and let's talk a bit about a reminder here of something we announced in the last episode, which, as we're recording this, was released, 5 hours ago? Maybe 6? So it's only just been out. And that is that we have the return of the Tomes Annual Contest.
Oh, great.
We took a couple of years off because it got to be a pain in the butt for me to do it all. But now that I have a regular co-host, I'm making her help out with some of it. And I've learned some lessons over the years to make it easier. And so we have the annual contest back. There's two things you have to do every month to be entered, and it runs until the end of June. The winners will be then announced in July. The two things that people can do this month in order to be entered in January. Tracy, you remember what they are?
Yes, they can go to the forums and talk about their favorite 2010 D&D moment. Or they can call into the BizLine and discuss Gamma World.
All right, we've got a Gamma World episode coming on, so call up to the BizLine at 919-BIZ-TOME. BIZTOME. And your call might make it in there, but if you do that and swing by the forums to talk about your favorite moment in D&D of 2010, you could be entered to win the contest, which includes fabulous prizes. We've actually, even though the episode has only just now come out, since we've recorded it, I've added several new prizes to the list. For example, first place walks away with a Noble Knight gift card for $35. They walk away with Eureka, written by the Gnome Stew crew, a book of GM inspiration. You'll get a print and PDF copy of that. Sly Flourish's DM Tips PDF, a compilation CD from Sonic Legends, who I know Chris could speak about. A six-month subscription to the Obsidian Portal website. A $75 gift card from Aaliyah Tools. A $20 promo from Q Workshop. And a one-year subscription to Epic Words website. So first place is looking at some pretty big prizes. And if you want to see more about what's being offered and what the prizes are, or how the contest can be entered and all that kind of stuff, you can swing over to thetomeshow.com and there'll be a link in the show notes to the contest page. And we thank all of those guys for their support.
That's an amazing press package. That's great.
And I'm still talking to a few companies, so we might be adding some more yet too.
I never win anything.
Impressive.
And anybody can win except Tracy.
Right.
Anybody in the whole world except Tracy.
Even, I feel loved.
Even Brian James?
I'm thinking Brian James could win. But if Matt James enters, I'm going to give all of his entries to his brother Mike. The coolest of the James brothers.
I thought that was Jesse James. Where am I? Confused.
Jesse James is the most rebellious of the James brothers.
Oh, okay.
Tracy, give us the next news
yes.
item.
Yes. Next news item is that in today's Ampersand column, they mentioned a bunch of changes and new things coming up. Among them are Death to D&D Minis. Magazine compilations will now be gone for the monthly Dungeon and Dragon articles. And so are these three products, the Class Compendium, Heroes of Sword and Spell, Mordecai's Magnificent Emporium, and the Hero Builder's Handbook.
All right, let's take these one at a time. The death of the D&D Minis line. What do we think?
It's not going to affect me very much.
McCoy?
I think it's an opportunity. I mean, third-party miniature developers have sort of had to take a back seat since Wizards of the Coast got into that game. Producing the plastic minis back when third edition was going on. Now that they're getting out of that, it gives an opportunity for a lot of the third party guys out there to do something with it.
Tracy?
I use Bananagrams, so.
Bananagrams?
Yeah.
Is that like banana phone?
No, they're kind of like Scrabble tiles. You know, it's a game of the imagination. You can imagine the minis.
All right, well, this was the one part of today's announcement that I don't like at all. I was late getting into the D&D minis thing, and there's a lot of D&D minis that I want and I don't have, and now they're not making any more, and I'm not going to be able to get them, and that makes me sad. I mean, tokens are fine, but I like minis a lot more. So I guess I have to spend my life savings and go out and buy all the minis I can so that I've got all that I could ever want.
Sounds
well,
good
the
to
secondary
me.
Market will thank you for that.
Yeah. Although, if as McCoy has suggested, if this is a chance for third-party miniature makers to fill in that gap, then I guess I'm fine with that, too. I don't care who makes them. I just like pre-painted plastic minis. I'm a gamer, but I'm not a mini painter. So I don't want to have to do all the painting, and I don't want to have to deal with all the little metal minis and deal with all that kind of stuff. I just want to be able to buy something that I can use out of the box. And if somebody else is going to make it, then that's fine. I don't care. But that's what I want in, for my game. So how long will that take for somebody to step in and replace Wizards?
A year.
Well, you know, Reaper already has a line of pre-painted plastic minis that I think has not necessarily taken off the way that maybe they wanted it to. Mm-hmm. But it's out there, and they already have that as part of their line.
All right. Well, I'll have to keep an eye on them and keep an eye on, you say, a year from now to see who else steps into the game then. The next announcement then was that the compilations of the magazines are gone. I guess my response is, does anyone care? Yeah, that's a resounding no.
I mean, I liked having the archives available. It was easy to just download one big magazine, but it's not a big deal.
Right. I mean, they did a survey a while back asking questions like, how do you consume the magazines? And I very specifically said, I don't care about the compilations. I feel like they did the compilations for a few years because they killed off the magazines, and they felt like this was a way of still doing magazines without having to print magazines. As sort of an in-between, a compromise. And now they figured out that I guess it doesn't really matter. Although you would have thought they had statistics on how many people were downloading the compilations.
Oh, you make it sound like they have a plan.
Aren't you supposed to be the pessimist, McCoy?
Oh, who, me? No.
Aren't you the one that always tells me you want to be the Dvorak of gaming?
Look, the organizational capabilities of the Wizards of the Coast has kind of started to slip a little in the past year, and you can sort of see it in this, you know, some of the things they announced today were examples of that. And so, yeah, I mean, I like DDI, but it's slowly kind of getting a little frayed at the edges. And so, okay, they decide to get rid of the compilations, and I don't care about that. But I really don't expect them to have a really good plan either, because I haven't seen them demonstrate that they have a plan.
Yeah, and how much of this is, I mean, they did just have a couple of new people get promoted to positions where they're the ones doing the organization, maybe 6 months or so ago, maybe a little bit longer. So how much of this is just, you know, now they've been in position long enough that the changes that they're implementing are starting to be seen? And so we're just seeing the restructuring, because a lot of their stuff that they do is well far afield, and they don't make quick changes when these things happen.
I think that's a lot of it.
So we'll blame Mike Merles then? Is that what you're saying, Tracy?
No, that's what you're saying.
Oh, okay. Well, good. And then the other announcement that they've taken three products off of the list: Class Compendium Heroes of Sword and Spell, Mordenkainen's Magnificent Emporium, and the Hero Builder's Handbook are no longer being released. Which is interesting because they're largely player-based books, no?
They are, although I don't even know what that third one was supposed to be. And I'm not sure that the Class Compendium is really necessary. As I understand it, that was supposed to be sort of how to play the other classes if you started with essentials, or how to, you know, choose essential feats if you have a non-essentials character. And I think that sort of thing, number one, is not very difficult to explain, and number two, probably doesn't need an entire book in order to make that connection.
Okay.
When I complained about the essentials and the lack of connection then with the original 4E books, you know, the thing that people pointed out to me was, oh, the Class Compendium is going to do this. And the fact that it's missing just has me worried that it's not going to be as easy for people who maybe come in brand new and only play essentials to then understand how the other 4E character classes work. But hopefully it'll be fine.
Yeah, I got to agree with Tracy, actually. It is a little worrisome, because I had the same complaint with the essentials, is it doesn't seem to link very evenly with the previous, you know, character classes and such. And I kind of wanted them to have a book out there for people who start out on Essentials, because I just bought my nephew his first, like, I bought him a Redbox. And, you know, he's starting out with the more Essentials paradigm of stuff. I want him to be able to get in and start playing with me, you know, when he comes down to visit. And a lot of my content will be a new thing for him, and he won't necessarily understand how they mesh real well. And I think that's a shame. Also, listen, if you're going to cancel books, that's fine. It happens. Don't tell me that you're going to replace it with board games. If I want role-playing games, don't give me board games. Don't give me cards. Don't give me board games. Don't give me video games or movies. I want a role-playing game. Don't tell me I need to take a comfort in the fact that you're giving me something that I wasn't asking for.
Yeah, none of these three books necessarily excited me and energized me. I would have bought all of them. I would have definitely been interested in the Mordenkainen's Magnificent Emporium, because who doesn't like a book full of magic items?
Well, yeah, exactly.
And particularly because there aren't a lot of examples of rare items and some of the uncommon items now,
right?
Given that we have the new magic system.
Right. And so, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some... there was some interest in these books, if nothing else, because I like, you know, the format of a book or a new book or two every month. But, you know, that's because I'm one of those people that spends way too much money on D&D. But, and maybe I'm going to take over as the Dvorak here, McCoy. I'm more concerned about the portents that this gives us, you know. In a time of rough economy for a few years, they hung on, and now suddenly they're canceling minis. They're canceling a bunch of books off of their release schedule for the year. They're replacing them with completely different things that have nothing to do with the core brand. And it makes me wonder if they're not scrambling to try to keep things afloat to justify their existence. And I don't know. I feel like I'm a little concerned that they're losing their way.
Okay, now, but which products are replacements? Because I didn't see that. I mean, all of the products that are on the list were announced at the Gen Con 2010 New Product Seminar. There's nothing new in the ampersand that says this is instead of something else, right?
Well, what it does say is, while this means fewer books, we plan to deliver just as much great content for players this year through other formats, including board games, accessories, and digital offerings.
Which I read as the stuff that would have been in the class compendium will now be in the DDI online content that used to be a so-called magazine.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think they're going to – I mean, a lot of this stuff, the way their system works, a lot of their this stuff has been written already. So right. I imagine they'll just turn it into DDI articles. So we'll still get a lot of that content.
Which actually brings up another interesting point that wasn't in our list. They also announced that DDI articles are now going through R&D for review. Okay. And that's part of the reason that they've missed deadlines on some DDI articles is because there's a backlog right now of stuff going through R&D, where before it didn't go through it.
So they're doing more and more stuff with fewer and fewer people through R&D.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, I'm honestly, at this point, I'm a little worried about where the brand is and where the company's going. And I honestly hope, obviously, that they continue going strong and doing well. But I'm a little concerned that the writing's on the wall, that within a year or two, if things don't sort of settle out, you know, last year they spent a lot of time saying, hey, we're going to try a bunch of new things. We're going to do board games, and we're going to do all these box sets, and we're going to bring out this Essentials thing. And everything, you know, was all right. That's cool. I get it. That's interesting. You're reaching out to new audiences. You're reaching out to younger audiences. You know, okay, I can understand that and accept that and agree with it even. And then the next year, they announced that 2011 is going to be full of a bunch of other things that are completely different, and more box sets and no more players' handbooks. But instead, we're doing this other players' option thing and these other stuff, and we're not sticking to the brands and the things you know. And there's all this stuff that is going away, and we're doing a bunch of other stuff completely differently. And now we've canceled a bunch of that too, and it just sort of seems all real disorganized right now, and I'm worried that they're either scrambling or they're starting to fall apart, and I'm hoping I'm wrong and that it's not the beginning of the end, which could still take several years to happen, but it does have me worried. Am I seeing too much doom and gloom?
You can never see too much.
Yeah, I do see a certain degree of maybe disorganization and lack of focus and maybe even a certain lack of vision at this point, at least so far as they've shared it with us. On the other hand, sort of the model that was set out the first couple of years could only go so far. I mean, you could only ride the one player's handbook a year, one monster manual a year, one Dungeon Master's Guide a year, you know, fill in the blank power books. That could only go so far. You know, I kind of mourn the loss of the Mordenkainen's vault book or the Mordenkainen's Emporium book, because that's essentially Adventurer's Vault 3 in a sense. Martial Power 3, we don't really need that. Player's Handbook 4, I think maybe focusing on a specific power source rather than trying to do, you know, 4 or 8 or whatever, new classes, new races, you know, maybe a good idea. So there may be some, you know, course correction going on. Maybe it will come out okay. If it doesn't, you know, I still have a shelf 3 feet wide full of D&D books that I've, you know, just dipped into. I haven't hit Epic Tier yet with my campaign. So there's a long way, a lot of stuff I can do with the material that I already have if Wizards were to slide into the Pacific tomorrow and, you know, and never recover. So disorganized, yes, it looks that way. End of the world, I hope not.
They'll change over to 5th edition in 2012. That's my prediction right now.
Next year, 5th edition, huh?
Yep.
I suppose that's...
I thought they did that in October.
Yeah, I suppose that's not really that out of line, considering that that's the tradition, is that things go crazy and they try all kinds of crazy new things and experiment with a bunch of stuff right before a new edition.
Yeah, I'm going to call it right now. 2012, they'll announce 5th edition.
I hope not.
Will that be before or after December 21st?
That would be before. They'll probably do it at Gen Con, so it'll be before.
Okay.
2012 at Gen Con, they'll announce 5th edition, huh?
Yep.
All right, I'll have to be sure to go. on your say-so.
Just in time for the Christmas shopping season.
I suppose. All right. I have one other bit of news that I wanted to announce, and that bit of news is something that I actually would have liked to have announced on the last episode. It would have made a lot of sense there, except we didn't know about it when I recorded it. And that's that Samuel Dillon is going to take over as editor for the show, which is even awesomer, or extra awesome, on top of the other awesome that has been happening with the show lately.
Sucker!
So I've got Tracy, who's helping me with organizing some things. I've got Sam, who's helping me with editing things. I figure within the next 6 months, it's just going to be Jeff Grinder's The Tome Show, and I'll never have to be on it.
Nice.
I'll just completely disappear.
Very cool.
So Sam, we want to thank you. And Tracy, what's his website?
RPGmusings.com.
Thank you. I knew you'd have it ready off the top of your head. and he also works on the DM Roundtable and on 4Geeks4E.
Yes.
All right. Well, we've talked a long time now about stuff that isn't the D&D comic, and the D&D comic is sort of the focus of this episode. So let's go ahead and get into that in a bit here. Tracy's going to be asking the questions, and McCoy and I and Chris are going to be the experts answering those questions. Before we get into that, though, I want to mention our sponsor for the episode, Noble Knight Games. It's a local store and an online store all in one. They get the newest books and the stuff that's been long out of print. And if you're a D&D player, they have pretty much anything you might want or need. My pick for this episode is the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons comic, published by DC Comics way back in the day. Noble Knight has a whole slew of them for $3 or $4 a piece, check it out, linked in the show notes at thetomeshow.com. Have any of you read the old AD&D comic from,
yes,
what was it, the 80s?
What, late 80s, early 90s, I think?
That sounds right to me.
Yeah, the D&D, Forgotten Realms comics, there was a Dragonlance one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were all actually pretty decent. I got to say that the writing in the Dragonlance comic tended to be a little better than what I experienced in the novels, so that was fun.
Yeah, but, I think the Dragonlance were the only ones that I actually read from that particular series back then.
Right on. I remember reading some. I have a few smatterings of those old D&D comics. Not like, you know, I have one issue of this here and two issues of that one over there. And not necessarily in any particular order. So I'm interested in seeing how they all play out and how they all connect. And actually, I believe I saw somewhere that there's going to be a compilation of the Forgotten Realms ones, although our release date hasn't been announced yet. But
I'd buy it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that if or when it comes out.
I was going to say, I was particularly fond of the Forgotten Realms one. It was actually really quite entertaining.
I was just going to say, isn't that compilation from IDW?
Is it? It could be. They might have licensed it.
I think maybe it's either them, maybe, or Dark Horse. Dark Horse has been doing a lot of reprints of other people's stuff lately in these omnibus formats, these kind of digest-sized formats. So at any rate, looking forward to getting a chance to sort of relive those memories.
Yeah, and I'm sure that when that comes out, Noble Knight will be carrying that as well.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. With a huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
So now you get to do stuff. You guys can tell me about this comic, why I should read it, and everything like that. So first question, and I'll ask Chris, is it any good?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Actually, I've read issue number 0, which was the sort of teaser that they put out, as well as 1 and 2. And at this point, I'm really enjoying the story. In fact, as I tweeted back to Jeff yesterday, maybe it was, or maybe earlier today, he was mentioning that nobody seems to be very interested in this whole abyssal plague thing that's going on in the novel series. And they have something called the shadow plague going on in the comic series, which I think is pretty interesting, kind of a breakout of shadow energy. So yeah, I'm really enjoying the story. It is pretty predictable in some ways. Characters are kind of cliche, but that's all right. It makes it fun and recognizable.
Jeff, how's he wrong?
He's not wrong. I think story's good, the comic's good, the characters are good. I think they are, I don't know if I'd go cliche so much as archetypical.
He's mildly.
Like Chris said, there's not many surprises in it, but I think it does do a decent job of encapsulating some of the things that D&D is. I know I've enjoyed it. McCoy, why am I wrong?
Okay, there are things to like, don't get me wrong. The things I don't like is the fact that you never get enough time to just breathe in this story. They're keeping the action so fast and so rapid fire that you don't get a lot of chance to get to know the characters very well. When the guy's writing the dialogue, the dialogue is awesome. The guy who does it is the guy who writes Leverage, the TV show Leverage. And he's got the witty banter bit down pat. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. When there doesn't seem to be any time taken to actually develop a storyline or a plot, it's just... And it's a little fatiguing.
Well, and I sort of feel like that seems okay to me because it's issue 2. You know, if you're thinking about it in terms of a D&D game, they're essentially doing one encounter per issue. And as such, you know, they've had they're still sort of in their introduction, and I feel like we're going to get to know the characters, and we've already started to get some hints of the characters and who they are and what they're about and that kind of stuff, and I feel like they wouldn't give us those hints and that foreshadowing if they weren't going to do something with it. So I think they're going in the right direction.
Okay. So is there a particular setting it's using, or is it a generic D&D type thing?
Oh, it's the Nentir Vale.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have they explored things that maybe haven't been in the various books that have touched on the Nentir Vale? Like the DMG?
Yeah, I'm not a big Nentir Vale fan myself, so it could be rehashing some old stuff that we already know. It could be completely new. I don't know, because I'm not a big Nentir Vale person. It reads to me, I mean, I know it's in the Nentir Vale. It's clear that it is, but it almost feels relatively generic D&D to me with, you know, and I enjoy it on that level.
Yeah, you don't need to know anything about the Nentir Vale or any of that stuff in order to enjoy the story. And only in issue 2 do they actually get outside of Fallcrest anyway. So it's slowly expanding into the bigger world.
So, Chris, you talked about the story a little bit. How are you guys finding the story? I know it seemed like maybe there wasn't enough there. Do you want to expand on that a little bit?
I think McCoy was complaining there wasn't enough there.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It doesn't seem like they take any time to do anything between actions. It's our intro to the characters with a splash action scene, first page. Then by the third page, you know, they slow down to explain where that came from. And by the third page, it's still in action scene. And, you know, it's moving too fast. And it's not taking its time to build any tension. It's just all action. It's like watching an action film, an 80s action film, which doesn't have any actual depth to it. You're just watching people beat up people.
See, now I have a different take on the whole thing, is that because of that format, it feels more like a comic book version of D&D to me. You know, because that's typically how D&D works and things work in a D&D world, you know, is that it's action, 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 and then you'll get a chance and you'll take a break. And it's different than a typical sort of superhero comic, right, where you might spend 5 comics in the same fight. This one is spending 5 comics in 5 different fights and revealing a little bit nuggets here and there along the way. And I think part of why you might be feeling the way you do about the lack of story involved is that I find this comic to be a lot less wordy than a typical comic book. There is dialogue, and the dialogue is interesting and good where it's at, but they didn't bother to add in a lot of extra exposition and feel the need to necessarily explain all these other things. And I don't feel like that's a bad thing. I don't know that I'd want that in all of my comics, but sometimes I like a book that's a relatively quick and easy read, and I can pick up on what's going on right away, and by the end of it I feel like I've accomplished something, but I also feel like it's part of a larger story. And I sort of feel like this book does all of that.
Yeah, I think that this book is really good, and the author is really good at working with the artist at the principle of show, don't tell. And even the sort of voiceovers, so to speak, the little yellow boxes that give you direct narration, that even that is done in the voice of the main character, Adric Fell, the leader of the this little adventuring company. But I think there are some sort of mysteries and some questions that have been raised that are a long way from being answered. The you know, what's causing this outbreak of shadow energy in the town? What's that? They're chasing this orb in issue number 2. What's that about? There's a moment where the archetypical, Jeff, if you don't want to call it cliche, tiefling warlock has a confrontation with a changeling or a doppelganger who's imitating her sister, and there's some kind of guilt there in the past. I mean, you learn little things about the characters, and then it kind of goes away, so that there are these seeds that are being planted, plot hooks that are being planted, so to speak, for later on. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to come back and do that.
Yeah, and I certainly don't feel like it's moving any slower than the typical highly decompressed storytelling that happens in other comics. So, I mean, comics spend 2 years or longer telling relatively simple storylines.
Well, yeah, and don't get me wrong. I actually enjoy the comic. But the reason I like the comic is I like the main characters and I like the dialogue. I think one of the other things that adds to my sense is that it feels very much like everybody else in the book, with the exception of somebody who walks on and gives their name, feels like, you know, I shouldn't care about them. Their scenery, it's very much, it doesn't feel like it's in a world. It's just them going, jumping through hoops and doing things. And I think in a typical comic book, I kind of get a little more feel that they're in a world. And in this one, it's less of, the world exists a little less around these guys when you're not looking at, you know, where they're at, is kind of my impression. But that's just me. I like the comic. Don't get me wrong. It's the writing's not terrible. There's just a couple of minor complaints.
Okay. Do you guys feel that it captures the feel of D&D?
Sure. Pages full of nameless orcs there for no reason other than to be slaughtered. You bet.
Well, here's the thing about it is that I feel like in the dialogue, it really captures D&D well. To the point that sometimes I feel like the things being said or done are as much a player saying it as it is a character saying it.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it gets D&D pretty solidly covered.
Well, I'm just going to say this. So this adventuring company consists of a fighter, a paladin, a rogue, a warlock, and a ranger, an elven archer ranger, right? Very iconic D&D type characters. Issue zero, you start out with a fight. They actually give you in issue one and issue two, back on by the letter page, they actually give you a write-up, a character sheet for some of the main characters.
Uh-huh.
So we know that they are, in game terms, they're supposed to be seventh level. All right, so issue zero gives us a fight against a black dragon, gets us into the Underdark and introduces that terminology. And there's a really sort of cute throwback to the first edition player's handbook when the rogue climbs up this statue. It's the statue from the first edition D&D player's handbook, and she climbs up there to get this gem out of its eye. So there's a lot of sort of D&D lore, both fourth edition and earlier editions, kind of woven into the thing. And it really feels, it kind of feels right. It certainly feels better than either of the D&D movies that have been tried so far.
Yeah, and I feel like this... I feel like it does a nice job of capturing the fun and the humor and the things that come up in D&D. The question, I think, is going to be whether or not that translates into a comic book that sells. Because we've had a lot of D&D comics over the years, and none of them seem to be able to stick around for very long.
Did anybody else notice that they don't have a healer?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. What's that about? You can't have a D&D party without having at least one leader. I noticed that, and it bothered me a little bit, but not enough to not enjoy it, because it is literary rather than a game, and so they can kind of get away with it.
So you talked a little bit about how the previous comics didn't do so well. How do you think this one compares to them, Jeff?
I feel like this story and this writing style does a better job of capturing the feel of D&D. I still sort of feel like the world and the setting and the story feel very sort of generic to me, which I think was some of the problems, because there was some D&D comics through the late 80s, early 2000s as well, in the third edition days, that were decent, but also felt generic both in story and setting to me, and I think they could have done better if those things were a little more evocative. And so in some ways, this one has more of a sense of humor, and thus is, I think, more fun, and the art is great, but I hope that they can get me to care about the setting and the story a little more.
Yeah, I may kind of swing a little bit differently on that one. I don't know which comic series you're thinking about. The most recent ones, I think, were done by Devil's Due Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And they tended to go in for little mini-series or mini-stories, and they tended to feature fairly well-known figures within an established setting. So, you know, you'd get a Dritz comic, you'd get some Dragonlance, you'd get an Elminster comic, you know. And with this one, it's going to be a matter of the characters who are new characters. I mean, they're iconic archetypes, but they are new names and sort of new faces in a sense. And so getting to know those characters, I think, may be actually more fun, you know, than reading another adaptation of a novel or, you know, an untold story of Raceland or something like that.
Yeah, I actually don't disagree with you. I was actually going back one step further.
Going back farther?
Before the Devils Do stuff, where there was some original third edition based D&D comics. I can't remember who published them now. And it's too bad I didn't have the podcast at the time, because the guy who did the art for it lived relatively near to me, and I could have probably talked to him about that. And it was set in Greyhawk, I think, but I don't remember who published it.
I've got to say that this comic is not generating any kind of buzz. When I say that, I mean, IDW is actually fairly well known for taking classic materials and breathing new life into them and making them really interesting to a new audience. Like their takes on G.I. Joe and G.I. Joe Cobra and all that. You have critics going, I know it's silly, it's G.I. Joe, but this is a really good comic. You don't have anybody talking about this. So, I mean, will it have any staying power? For it to have staying power, it needs to have more than just gamers buying it. Gamers that are willing to pick up a comic book. It's got to appeal to people outside our little circle. And I don't think it's doing that. I think that it has potential, but right now it's not.
Do you think, like, along the lines of the Redbox artwork, that it's trying to appeal more to the nostalgia than necessarily trying to get new people involved and interested in telling D&D type stories?
I think that could be said about it. I mean, I picked up both the module cover version and the standard covered version. The module cover version actually has modules in it, which is why I picked it up. But the truth is, I picked it up because I like D&D. I'm a comic fan, and as a comic fan, there wasn't anything on a purely comic book level, you know, purely the art and craft of making good comics. There was nothing here that blew me away and made me go, wow, that was awesome. It's got good stuff, but I wouldn't have picked it up if I hadn't been a D&D fan.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that.
I think you're going to have a hard time getting a non-D&D fan to pick up a book called Dungeons & Dragons.
If it had been much better written, you know, like just blow you away well written, you probably would have gotten the interest of people who weren't already D&D fans.
I suppose.
Like what they've done with some of their other properties. This, you know, for a D&D fan, they're going to enjoy it. But I'm not sure that's enough sales to keep it going.
Well, I think we can probably give them to the end of the first trade and then see if it generates some buzz at that point. Because sometimes it takes some time to build a story, too.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
Tracy, any more questions?
I think you covered how the art pretty well, too. So I don't have anything else unless you want to add more about the art.
It's unremarkable. It's not bad, but it's not great either.
It's better than what I've seen in some mainstream comics, but that's not necessarily saying much.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's solid. That's my description. It's solid. All right.
Are we going to talk about the Dark Sun run that they're about to come out with?
We are now. The Dark Sun. There's also a Dark Sun comic coming out. The issue number zero of this comic also included the issue number zero for the Dark Sun comic, but that book's not actually out yet, so none of us have read anything besides issue zero.
Yeah, it comes out this month.
So
yes,
I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. I'm not Mr. Super I Love Dark Sun, but I'm a fan of D&D and I'm a fan of comics, so I'll probably support anything that's D&D in a comic.
I'll probably buy the first one of that.
I think that the preview made me interested in it. I think the preview actually felt a little bit more, this is a comic set for a world rather than this is a comic about these guys. that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It has.
I think that's fair. Yeah,
it feels like it has a more living and breathing setting in it than the other one does. What it doesn't have for me is the humor. What I'm really enjoying of the D&D comic is the sense of humor that it seems to bring to it.
That's fair.
But I don't expect a lot of humor out of a Dark Sun comic either. So
exactly.
Oh, did you guys get the ones with the module covers so you could see the extra content?
I did not. Why don't you tell us about it?
All right. So the first one has a module in it by Bill Slavicek. And the second one's got a module by Chris Perkins based on the comic. Now, both of them, of course, have the character sheets, like the standard issues. And the character sheets are seventh level. But the adventures are first and second level adventures.
So it'll be a really easy fight. Mm.
Yeah, and actually, Slavicek actually explained that as, you know, we needed to make this a little more accessible to new people. So, and if you want to improve it, just look in the Dungeon Master's Guide and follow the rules that you find there. But yeah, it's interesting. They do a fairly decent job of converting what happens, some minor changes to make it flow a little more on the table. You know, you're not going to have a fight that happens simultaneously with members of your party in two different locations. I can't imagine why you wouldn't want to do that. They also add some interesting little details, like in the bar in the first comic, they talk about some of the people that are in the background. Like they toss in a barmaid that's interesting, or in a dwarf, and a competitive adventuring company that you might talk to. Also, they actually tell you the name of the changeling in the adventure in the second issue.
So you would recommend the module versions over the normal versions, huh?
Yeah, they're the same price. And have the same level of content, except more.
So that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
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 I have to be honest, I'm a little confused by the comic thing. Why they decided to start off at 7th level. I did flip through issue 0 at one of the conventions I went to, and I got it. And the use of a lot of the older D&D stuff, while I know it appeals to you guys because you've read it and you know about it, it left me sometimes scratching my head as to what was going on. It felt very much like an older school D&D thing compared to what I was used to in 4th edition. So I was just a little confused as to the target market for it.
I'm old.
I'm actually pretty old, but I'm new to the game, so.
Yeah, I guess I didn't feel like it had a lot of baggage to it. I mean, outside of what the one joke about the gems in the statue's eyes.
Yeah, just the sort of general feel that you get from being a longtime D&D player. But yeah, other than that one in-joke, I didn't see too much either.
And as for starting at 7th level, I think it just gives them an opportunity to then give these characters some background to be revealed over time and some story to reveal over time.
Oh, right. I just meant if you're trying to use the comic to get new people in and like explain how the game worked. I don't know if this is a goal. I was just saying that it could easily be one for a comic book. I'm not sure it made sense that way.
Yeah, see, I don't know that. I almost sort of feel like the people making the comic aren't going into it with the goal of anything to do with, you know, reviving or bringing people into D&D. I think it's just they want to use D&D to tell a story through a comic book.
Right, but then why have the first level modules?
Wizards of the Coast is providing that separately.
Right.
So, I mean, it's two different people. There's different people working on one project with different goals in mind.
Right.
And so I think the module thing is just a little something to appeal to those of us that are gamers.
Yeah, I honestly, I think John Rogers, who actually probably is a gamer,
yeah,
was likely to have written the story and said, here's the story. And they went in and said, well, the characters are obviously 7th level, but we want to make the adventures this. And, you know, basically when he handed it off for, give me some game stats.
Right.
They handled all of that. So I think that's all Wizards of the Coast at that point.
I think a lot of that is, yeah. I mean, I don't know about like the character sheets at the end of the normal issues. Those might be him, but I think the modules and stuff are definitely Wizards of the Coast. All right. Well, I think we've talked the heck out of the news. we've decided that within a year, somebody else will be making pre-painted plastic minis successfully. And within 3 years, D&D will be dead. We said that the D&D comic is not necessarily the deepest, most profound comic ever, but captures D&D pretty well and seems to be going somewhere, although maybe hasn't produced a ton of story for us at this point, but seems like it could. Does that summarize what we talked about today?
Yeah. 2012, 5th edition.
2012, oh, that's right, 2012, 5th edition. All right, well then, that's episode 162. I want to thank our guests for the episode. Let's start with Mr. McCoy. Where can people find you on the interweb?
The one-stop shop for all of my stuff is jeremiahmccoy.com.
All right. And Mr. Hurd?
DrChris.me.
And Dr. is DR?
Yes.
All right. And I also want to thank our sponsor, Noble Knight Games, as well as Sam Dillon, who is our new regular editor, and you can find him at rpgmusings.com. You can also, of course, email the show at thetomeshow@gmail.com. You can visit the forums at gamershavenpodcast.com and call the Tome's biz line at 919-BIZ-TOME with your thoughts, questions, or comments for upcoming episodes.
In fact, you should do that because we're running our contest, and this month visit the forums and talk about your favorite moments of D&D in 2010, or call in our biz line and talk about Gamma World.
Did I mention $75 from Aaliyah Tools for first place?
Oh, that's so sweet.
That's a lot of stuff. You can get one of those big briefcase things full of their tokens. It's awesome. I have one. Alright, well, you can catch all of the goodies and links in the show notes at thetomeshow.com, and this has been episode 162, where Tracely has been a tiefling warlock with a surprising heart of gold. I'm a dwarf who is pretty sure that anything good in the world was made by dwarves. McCoy's a halfling thief who would rob your grandma as soon as help her. And Chris is the human vet who leads us all into battle as we discuss the D&D comic book by IDW of
The Tome. I'm on the wall.